Welcome to Imagine This Podcast,
the show where we discuss, celebrate, and highlight all the excellent and abundant arts and culture in Milwaukee.
We hope that after listening to the pod, you'll see and experience our city and the incredibly vibrant arts and culture community in a new way. Welcome back to another edition of Imagine This Podcast. It's a vintage episode because it's only me and David Lee.
Hello, everybody.
Me and David Lee down by the schoolyard.
Me and Bobby David McGee Lee. That almost works. You know what happens when Lindsay's away is that we test out new formats of the show, and we had basically about 45 minutes of pre-show chatter between Mac and me.
Will not make it just because we were like, nah, this is a bit too self-indulgent. We're gonna go. So let's just jump straight into
But stay for an Easter egg.
Yeah, well, we'll post an Easter egg after, which is probably the best part of our reflections. Also, in honor, you know, since it's just me and David, we went ahead and just decorated the virtual space here. We're wearing our favorite pro wrestling fan gear from the 80s, and we also have Slim Jims all over the place. So yeah, we knew that Lindsay wouldn't go for this, but I'm right now wearing a Dusty Rhodes American Dream t-shirt. Well, David is sporting a Flying Brian Pillman shirt, right? So, and for certain fans of a certain age, you're high-fiving each other, and for the 99% of the listeners, you're just
what the hell is going on?
Staring blankly at us, but that's
I was going to pull out the Jumpin' Jim Brunzel Killer Bees.
Killer Bees.
Sure.
B. Brian right. Blair, Jumpin' Jim Brunzel, an incredibly underrated tag team. But I digress. We're digressing back to the other 40 minutes of content we're not even bothering to put on because it's unusable. Welcome back to another edition of Imagine This Podcast. Coming up after the break, we actually have a really fascinating and impressive guest. We've got Omar Sheikh, who is one of our city's culinary and cultural leaders. So he'll be after the break to discuss what's it like trying to get through the pandemic and how we're seeing the city after it, at least from the cultural standpoint of the culinary arts. But before then, David, let's kind of build off that theme. How have our own exploits? We did document our experience going to a buffet.
That's right.
Which is kind of different because that's a serve yourself. And if I remember, the wait staff was more about throwing napkins, you know, dousing us with like water so that we didn't like put more food on ourselves and making sure our plates were clean, which is a service, but it's a different kind of waiting.
It's different, right?
We thought maybe a little story time before we kind of talk into it. How's been your entry back into sort of the social culinary life of a city? What's that look like?
A couple weeks ago, maybe it was 2 weeks ago, met a friend for a happy hour at Black Sheep. Delightful, delicious Black Sheep in Walker's Point. And you know, didn't expect to eat, but like it got a little bit late, happy hour, and we were like, hey, maybe we should share a bite to eat. And it occurred to me how long it had been that I had actually had to like look at a menu, think about what to eat, and then order it. And then not only beyond that, right, like have the food come and then like deal with the eating portion. And like, well, my friend and I are both vaccinated. It was still like, there are still like moments of like COVID safety where we're like, oh, we should have separate dipping sauces. We should have, you know, like let's not touch the other person's like slice of this pretzel thing as we were cutting it. And it was, you know, I think for me, it came so natural. I think partially because we've been a lot more conditioned, right, to be wary and to be considerate of people's sort of having like people's hands up and stuff. Mm-hmm. But it was also kind of like a moment of like, huh, this has changed, right? This has changed from let's get a big plate of nachos and everybody just like get your hands all up in it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which I think is a part of a way of how we interact with each other, how we interact with food, how we sort of build community, right? I mean, yours and my relationship, if we were not like, you know, if it were not for food, I don't know that we'd be here.
We have nothing in common. We really have nothing
in common.
We really have nothing in common. Yeah, I think one of our fondest food memories was in Manhattan, 2 a.m. During a conference, and we were eating Halal Guys.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and sort of stooped over. We took it back to the hotel. And so we're just sitting around with trays of food, you know,
trays of
shawarma and rice, and it's just dripping. And we're just talking. And I don't even know how we went to, like, how we got to sleep having that full, you know, full stuff. But you're exactly right. Like, we bond over food, and that's been it. But it's good that you got back out there. And yet there, it sounds like there's almost like this, your brain's operating on a couple different levels.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I know I need to change our behavior. I know, but yet this is so much fun, to be back and not having to think about it.
And also note that it was also just incredibly, exciting. I would say it, to see that, you know, that day a couple of weeks ago at Black Sheep, that there were a lot of people, were a lot of people together, eating, celebrating, sort of like being, it seemed very, very normal. How about you? You shared when we were talking about this, that you had a fun experience at one of your favorite restaurants recently.
Yeah. So my wife has some family that were coming through, and we had not seen them in 10 years. So it's like, let's grab lunch. And so I had this sort of challenge of like, where would I take someone for a meal if they're like from out of town? They live in Florida. They're coming through. Where do I want to take them? And I said, I'm taking them my number one pick from the culinary draft we did, which was La Merenda. So we went to La Merenda for lunch. And my first muscle memory is like, I can't get a table. It's not going to happen. But at the end, it's lunch. So it's a little bit different. Right. And people are still coming back. So there's still, I would say, even though we were on the early end for lunch, there's obviously still room. So I definitely encourage those folks to check it out. And again, La Merenda's decked out the place with tons of plexiglass partitioning, in a way so that, you know, you're not brushing up against people. They space it out. So if that was a concern, it's definitely assuaged with how they did that. And, you know, the staff is very friendly and also masked, and, but the menu was still the good stuff, man. And, I guess the only thing that's different from before was the food was still quality. I was just managing myself. I was just noticing my own patterns of like, maybe it's not because I didn't eat with you and we didn't go one of everything, but it was definitely a little bit more measured and we ate slower, and it was good. I ate like an adult as opposed to like, you know, a swarthy pirate that was just coming back from some being at sea. It was great. The meal was so great. And I just, the nuances of like someone asking you for something, you tell them what you want and then they bring it to you. That is such a novel concept, it felt. Yeah, so really good to go back to Merenda. I can't wait to go back again because there's about 10 plates I didn't order because of the company. I didn't want to be that guy. But it felt different. But yet at the same time, as we leaned into it, also there are moments of, you know, similar to you're sharing plates. It's tapas, right? So they have it, you know, again, you have four empanadas. So it's kind of nice. You divide them one empanada each. I think it's kind of set up that way. Although the sambal, so good. That is definitely a spoon it, and, you know, as long as you're spooning yourself, but I could see potentially that could get kind of, it's all over the place-ish, if that makes sense. Like, that's not a dish that's kind of like a pizza where it's cut. And,
you know, right.
So,
right.
Overall, it was great to be back at La Merenda. I can't wait to go back, and I look forward to doing some more dining in the city and dining out, as well as like hitting our street fairs, you know, and enjoying food trucks and, you know, eating on the street. So,
you know, I think the thing that I sort of always take away from this last year, right? I mean, you've heard me say it, and I think other folks have heard me say this, right? That like the arts and culture sector, you know, whether it's live theater, live music, movie theaters, right? They're not made for 25 or 50% capacity. And it's also true for our restaurants, right? That like, right. I mean, they depend on high turn, lots of volume to get through. And man, it's gotta be, and you know, we're going to talk to Omar a little bit about this, but it's gotta be rough, man. When, you know, you just can't operate, you can't get that same throughput, due to, you know, this thing, right? Yeah, it's gotta be tough. It's really nice to be able to see that, you know, things are slowly coming back. And I gotta tell you, like we mentioned this a little bit in the interview, but it seems like folks are in real good moods over these last few weeks, right? Nice weather, people are out.
It's not necessarily that poster, that Victory in Japan Day poster where the people are kissing each other in the streets kind of thing. Cause COVID and, you know, obviously gender relationship rules are a lot different than they are now, but
you get the feeling though.
I think that sentiment's there. Yeah. People,
yeah,
you know, definitely I'm sure with the first concerts that'll be public. Right. And as we get back to live performances, I think, or even in the Deer District, right? Like when the Bucks are playing and people are out and about.
It was just in the office yesterday when I was, when I left the office, I drove down Juneau, right by the Fiserv, and there were people, I mean, obviously getting ready to go watch the game yesterday, Bucks and Six. but
yeah, good luck with that. Good luck with that.
But yeah, no, I mean, there were a bunch of folks out, right? Like it did feel maybe not like Victory, you know, World War II Victory, but you know, it definitely felt much, you're right. The sentiment is out. Like you really get that feeling.
Yeah. So, we're looking forward, after the break, we're going to talk with Omar Sheikh. He's a Milwaukee business owner and community leader, well known for his award-winning restaurant Carnivore. He's also one of the top-rated steakhouses in Wisconsin and for its amazing customer service and mouthwatering cuisine. He's also part of a partner in the Third Market Street Hall at The Avenue, which is about to emerge, right? It's going to be a massive food hall downtown. He's got a passion for moving the city of Milwaukee forward in his active involvement in the community. And he also has been chairman of the board, board chair at Visit Milwaukee, right? Which is sort of Milwaukee's, you know, sort of external face to the country and bringing folks in. He's also a member of the Wisconsin Center District Board of Directors as well. He strongly believes in giving back to the community. And he's also a chairman of the Milwaukee Kitchen Cabinet, which has put together initiatives over the holidays to provide holiday meals and gifts for nonprofit groups as well. After the break, we're going to catch up with Omar Sheikh. We work together, we're heroes through and through. Like the foundation of our homes, we stand together, Milwaukee's strong. Through the fire. Welcome to the podcast, Omar. Great to meet you, sir.
Yeah, great to meet you as well. Great to be here.
Oh, man. We're so grateful to have one of our city's cultural and culinary leaders in the room.
It's been a long time coming. We've been trying to get after folks in the hospitality world for a while. We just have not been able to work it out for some strange reason. You guys are always busy.
Wow. There's a pretty good reason over the last year why hospitality wasn't Just trying to survive, busy trying to stay afloat.
And appreciate you taking the time to share the insights of that, as well as the hope moving forward as we're coming out of this thing. So, but before we get into it, Omar, we are an arts and cultural podcast, and I'm curious, would love to hear you tell us a story about an arts or cultural experience that left a strong imprint on you. Might have been something you read or something you witnessed, or it might have been something you created or performed. It could be from your formative years. It could be from last week. We're just sort of wondering what is something that has left a strong imprint on you might have influenced.
That's a pretty easy question, just because I recently went there, and I went to Fort Lauderdale with my family.
Okay.
And we toured. I have a very close friend in Miami that's really dialed in there. So we went to go meet him in this area called Wynwood Walls.
Okay.
And I don't know if you guys are familiar.
No.
You've walked it or you've experienced it. It's like an art district.
Okay.
They kind of redeveloped the whole area. And there's, you know, mural after mural in an entire area. Some of the best local artists from all around.
Wow.
I mean, and what they have done is they have now attracted so many national brands to the area, and it has become a huge destination. They're so cool what they're doing. So it's kind of drawn some inspiration in terms of some of the ideas that we have, when I say we, Josh Krznak, and I have for West of the River.
Awesome. Awesome. Oh, well, I look forward to hearing more of those ideas.
Look up Wynwood Walls, and you guys from Arts and Culture, you guys should go check it out and go hang out down there. It's amazing.
Yeah.
It sounds, I mean, that sounds a lot like, you know, I remember talking to some of the folks on the East Side Bid, Tim Gokman, some of those folks, about how like Wallpapered City and Black Hat Alley really transformed. They took that sort of like, you know, sort of nondescript alley and sort of made it a thing, right? And now you've got all that sort of development around that alley insofar as how it sort of connects, you know, UWM on the south side up to the sort of like Whole Foods-ish sort of pocket of the east side, right? It's amazing how you can sort of create that kind of a sense of community just by murals, right?
Yeah, I mean, for sure. I think you use the right word, and it connects the areas and kind of bridges the areas all together. And so to be able to pull that off west of the river, I think would be something very, very special.
Super exciting.
Well, I mean, you're sort of naming it. Things are happening on the east side of the west side, and there's a small little project called the Third Street Market Hall that you've been helping. a small mom and pop shop, right? We're talking about space and connection and all these things. And so you've been forming the tapestry of the city through all the different projects. And I'm sort of wondering, right, like me and David have seen, as we're learning, beer, brats, and cheese as a phrase, but that's not inclusive of all of it. And I'm wondering, what are you excited about with regards to the tapestry that you know, you and a lot of these other folks are creating culture, are forming and creating a new Milwaukee, if you will? I'd love to hear your thoughts on how that's coming along and how you're seeing it.
Yeah, I think we still need to embrace like some of the old German heritage and, you know, the beers and brats and things of that nature, right? But it's just, I mean, there's been an evolution of chefs and great chefs and James Beard chefs and, you know, not even a lot of restaurants that are just really creative with the cuisine. We're really looking to strive to do that over at Third Street Market Hall. You know, we're bringing in 24 different vendors. They won't all be prepared foods, but when you bring in a plethora of talent and put it in one place, right? Mm. It kind of creates something community that I think everything is done through food in my life. I do all my deals, raise all my money, all the political deals. We do it through meals and through food. That's how we get everything done. And so I think food and music are some of the most important things that we have in our lives today.
You know, so for most people, I think when they look back on their lives, right? Like, For example, like myself, I didn't come into the nonprofit world because like I always dreamed about it, right? Like, do you have a story about how you ended up in restaurant and the hospitality industry? Like, was there a moment as a kid where you were like, that's the thing that I want to do? I want to put together deals and open restaurants and bring people together through food.
No, I come from a very intelligent family. I was really the dumb one out of the entire family. I mean, my sister, you know, chief resident medical school, and my other sister has her doctorate. My father was a dean of engineering. So, but I always had a gift with people. Mm. And so even when people were coming over, I was that hospital kid that would ask people what they wanted, bring them drinks. And so I was, even though I wasn't the smartest, I mean, by miles, I was one of the more liked kids in the neighborhood just because I was always trying to be nice to everybody and just trying to be hospitable. So for me, you know, I just kind of landed on my lap getting into the restaurant business, but it was never the end goal, I should say.
Yeah.
You know, for me, the most important, most exciting thing for me is the connection with people. Mm. And that's what I really am the most passionate about, is every day I get to meet new people. You know, it's so cool that, you know, last night, just taking care of tons of the Pirates, CEOs there, Euchre, owner of the Brewers, not the Nacho, came in. And then afterwards, to get to take care of the entire Brooklyn Nets management, coaches. So it's like, you know, every day you're just getting like amazing people coming through the doors. We're like, this is just crazy. This is awesome.
I'm hoping you're making the food extra dense and extra rich so they're a little bit slower the next day, right? You got to make sure that they're feeling that food vibe, that they just want to take naps during the game.
If I heard that a million times, like, can't you marinate the steaks and tequila and all that stuff? I think they can figure that out.
Fair enough. You know, as we were kind of setting up, right, you were sharing with us that you've been a mile a minute, right? And that's more than the usual mile a minute as it is working in this industry. It's because you and your colleagues have been trying to just stay alive, right, over the past, you know, and being resilient during the pandemic. And I'm just sort of wondering, right, like, What are you thinking is going to stick around in terms of the habits, or perhaps maybe the ways y'all work together? And what are you looking forward to maybe evolving, right, as hopefully more folks come out and about, right, and are going to be sitting in these spaces and being with other people?
Yeah, they're coming out. I mean, the demand is back. I mean, not to say this to brag, but I also say this to my followers and friends that, I mean, don't hit me the day of for reservations on weekends anymore. I'll get them as much as I can, but we're booked out 3 to 4 weeks on weekends at Carnival.
Wow.
Three to four weeks. We've never been 3 to 4 weeks pre-pandemic or anything like that. Our weekdays are packed. Our biggest issue today is we just can't find more people. You know, it's a labor issue. Mm-hmm. Find people to work. But one thing that this pandemic has done, and I was just texting prior to this with some of my restaurant friends and bar friends, is this has brought us all together. Mm-hmm. I mean, we really work together cohesively to, you know, put together a large group of operators, work with the health department, medical college to help establish criteria for, you know, the COVID plan, COVID safety plan. And we really had each other, right? Because there are moments like if I was on a cliff, like any one of us could have jumped. And I'm not kidding. Like having government dictate your business and shut it down and not being able to open and then not knowing, you know, not being in control of your future and having to feed all my employees and their families and like my family, it was brutal. Yeah. It was just brutal. So I think there's a lot of optimism now and we're still communicating a lot. I think that will, that communication will probably go away in 3 to 6 months. And I only say that because everyone's going to get so busy again that they're going to, you know, caught up in their own worlds. I mean, I always get up at 5 a.m. every day, the pandemic hit and it slowly began to be 6, 7. And at that point I was waking up at 9 o'clock.
Wow.
It's amazing. You know,
wow.
Now I'm back up at 5 o'clock. And, you know, it took a month to get back into like, holy, like I have to work hard again. But, yeah, there were some benefits out of this pandemic.
What are you hoping? Like you noted, like the one challenge is labor, right? Keeping up with serving all these people or keeping up. What are you hoping to see or what are things that you're hoping that are going to help turn that tide so you can get talent to come in and host?
Well, I think there's a lot of different factors, but I'm one of those business people that think that, you know, when you incentivize people to stay home, they're going to stay home. Even up to 2 weeks ago, people didn't even have to apply for unemployment to get unemployment, which is crazy to me. Because if you see businesses across the state and across this country, they are begging government to cut these, the kicker, right? Which is another $1,200 a month so that people come back to work. And so, you know, it's just not, right now, it's just gotten really nasty. And small business, we're in a bidding war amongst each other, right? And I just don't think it's sustainable, but it's also turning now some businesses against each other because people are poaching because they're so desperate to find employees. They're trying to poach employees. So it's a mess. It's a mess right now. Mm-hmm. It's finally like, we're finally at the point where we can make money and grab money, right? But we can't hire enough people to do it. Mm-hmm. So sooner than later, hopefully we get our breakthrough. People come back to work and, you know, just there's normalcy right now. You look at the live block at the box, that's normalcy. Mm-hmm.
Well, you guys must be, I mean, if you're dealing with all that demand, right, and you have sort of the supply, not the supply chain, but the sort of like labor shortage block, right, you guys must just be like killing yourselves trying to like meet all of the sort of like incipient demand that's coming through, given that there's so much pent up kind of like desire to go out, right? Every time I'm been driving out, you know, these last few weeks, there's so many people out, right? So many people wanting to like hang out and be outside and like, you know, kind of do the thing that they haven't been able to do for the last 15 months.
Yeah, no, people are ready to come out and they are coming out. And I think this festival season is going to be crazy. Yeah. You know, I it would be nice for more and more people to start to come back to work too, for downtown's economy. Mm-hmm. But I'm starting to see, I mean, when you go to the Avenue, the parking lot every day seems to be getting more full. This week coming in, I had a ton of traffic, right? So just kind of caught myself. I was annoyed and I realized how happy I was to see traffic, right? Yeah. I mean, really, you know, and just seeing more people walk around, right? And so I just noticed people are in just great moods lately. Mm-hmm. It's really cool. So
you pair that with the good weather too, right? Finally, we made it through the winter. We get some nice summer, boom. And hopefully people are going to want to sit and be with each other a bit. And definitely at least in regards to downtown and getting some foot traffic and other downtown bids have been super aggressive with trying to just program the heck out of that area, getting people downtown with the murals and the buskers and more trucks getting around and whatnot. So, yeah. You know, you were on, you've been on the board of the Visit Milwaukee and you've sort of witnessed Milwaukee 2020 at this time last year, Milwaukee was having its hot girl summer. It was about to have its moment nationally. Right. Of course, as things change, but it sort of marked an inflection point of Milwaukee being seen, you know, as another, you know, another place to be, an interesting place to be. What do you think it's going to take for Milwaukee to return back to that upward trajectory? Or do you see like, no, it'll get back there. Like you said, we hold the course. Or are there other elements that need to play for Milwaukee to kind of still hold that national point of view, perhaps, as a place to want to be at and check out?
Yeah. I mean, you're talking to somebody that is incredibly bullish on Milwaukee, right? And so, you know, I believe in the city more than I believe in anything. And that's how much I love the city, right? And so it's like, we've got a lot of things. We have all the attributes, right? You have the attributes, and that's why we won the DNC, in large part because Alex Lazary, his crew, what he's done, right?
Yeah.
But we still have those attributes, even though it didn't happen, right? And so we have the lake, like we have a lot of great development continuing to happen, the Couture, the Convention Center, the Avenue. I mean, there's just so many things that are continuing to move forward that I think that things are, if you take a look at conventions, I'm doing this podcast out of Visit Milwaukee, this year already is starting to look like it's really picking up this year. Mm-hmm. Next year looks like it's going to be a banner year. So, you know, inviting all those other people to come in from out of town to pay for our infrastructure is a positive thing, right? But there's just so many great things happening. And I'm super excited about what's happening west of the river. I've played a very small part in a few things there. But when you talk about like Milwaukee Tool, right? Steve Richmond is a phenomenal, phenomenal leader, great friend. And then you talk about 600 people coming there in October, right? 2,000 by next year. And they're growing so rapidly. From the Symphony to the Bucks, to the hotel development, the Bucks Hotel, to, you know, the Avenue. There's so many incredible things happening in an area that really needed it for decades now. So I'm pretty excited about what's going to happen at the Avenue 3rd Street. I think I really sounds bad, but I think we're going to change the city with 3rd Street Market Hall. I really do. I really do.
You know, I think we talked a little bit about this at the beginning, but, you know, wanted to sort of put a finer point on this, right? Like, as you know, given your role in opening in having a bunch of really great restaurants right in our city, can you talk a little bit about the role and you know with the Market Hall, can you talk a little bit about the role of Milwaukee's restaurants and sort of the creating the culture and the tapestry of the city, right? Like, we talked a little bit about Beer Brats, the sort of German heritage, but like, as you're thinking about like how we're making, going into the third decade of the 21st century, what is food, and particularly the kinds of food that you love and you want to like bring to our city, how does that kind of make our city kind of an awesome place to live, work, and play?
Yeah, I think talked a little bit about it. I mean, the amount of great chefs that we have here in the city, right? You know, it's just representations of so many great cultures here as well. It just brings people together, right? And so it's like, what I've noticed too, from a tourism perspective, which is really cool, is a lot more people traveling in from other states just to come in, dine in the restaurants and experience Milwaukee. So our customer base throughout the pandemic was in large part a lot of people from Illinois coming in, because there's less traffic going in, even when like pre-pandemic, there's less traffic coming in from Northern Illinois to come in to eat, you know, at Carnivore or wherever else you go, versus going into the city of Chicago. And so it's just, I think it's created a cultural melting pot of a lot of people, bringing a lot of people together from a lot of different areas.
I've often heard this when I started here at Imagine MKE about something about like how the chefs in Milwaukee typically are really supportive of each other, right? So, you know, new chef comes on, gets hot. People are like, you should go check this place out. It's super awesome, right? Whereas sometimes I've heard that artists, you know, our role, right, as the arts and cultural hub, oftentimes do not have that sense of like, hey, there's this young hot artist, you got to go check them out. They're not as supportive. Do you have a sense of why that is, where chefs feel a little bit more like collaborative and a little bit more like celebratory of others, whereas potentially, and I'm not saying I've heard or seen this, but like that maybe there's a my gain is your loss in other sorts of sort of creative worlds?
Well, I wouldn't quite say that's necessarily true. It's a little clicky, to tell you the truth. And I think some of the chefs and groups are divided by politics.
Oh, that's interesting.
Kind of witnessed that throughout. I mean, I've always been the guy that's kind of down the middle. Like I vote for candidates. I never vote for whether you're Republican or Democratic. I vote for both sides, but I've witnessed, it just depends, right, on their views. But I would say that there are a lot of great chefs out there that have a broader mindset and an open mind to realize that collaboration is what's going to make our industry better. And so there are a lot of chefs that do work with one another from that perspective. But it's not all.
It's not all fun and games. Yeah, not all unicorns and rainbows. Right.
I've been in the middle of it, so.
Yeah. What do you? How are you seeing sort of the palette of Milwaukee's? You know, one of the things we talked to when Kevin Suker talked about, this is a cover band town. He once said that on a podcast. He's like, not as adventurous, maybe around music. And I'm wondering, I don't think that's the same though in terms of cuisine or not, right? Like, do you think it's a caravan town when it comes to eating? Or do you think there is a little bit more adventuresomeness, a little bit more creativity in terms of the restaurant?
In the last decade, you've seen a little more room for creativity. You know, people watch a lot of TV these days. There's a lot of chef-inspired type shows and things of that nature. But I don't, my opinion, I don't care what anyone says. I mean, 90 some percent of the people are pretty simple, have pretty simple palates. I mean, including myself. Like, I just went to the best restaurant experience of my life. One of our friends took us there to Ever in Chicago and popped some insane wine. It was 14 courses. It was Curtis, formerly of Race. He has a restaurant called Ever. And it was the best restaurant experience of my life. But normally, I don't want 14 courses and all the fancy stuff. Right. Just give me a nice big fat steak or burger. Like, at the end of the day, most people's palates are pretty simple. And so that's why you see a lot of the chefs that do a lot of the fancy stuff. I mean, you're starting to see a lot of them just creating like a great burger and custard stand because it is what it is.
Right.
Do the basics, but do them really well. And that's going to, people are going to flock to that. Right. And that's
right.
You could only eat foam and gelée, like, you know, a few times a week, right?
Exactly. I mean, but I mean, you're seeing different things. I mean, things that took this market a lot longer to hit, like the ramens and the pokés, things of that nature. You know, we're going to get a little adventurous and give some opportunities to some entrepreneurs to do actually really good, unbelievable Filipino food.
Yeah.
Food. And we have another one we just tried yesterday that does like street food, Indonesian street food.
Oh, wow.
And of course, you're going to have your burger bars, your vegan, your salads, your everything else. But it kind of lends itself in a food hall to be able to try different things, because there's a lot of people that will come to the food hall that would have never gone to one particular destination that might just try it because they're coming there.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right on. So here's the thing, Omar, we've got some power on this podcast. Very little power. We got some power. And the thing is, we have the ability to make our guest the city's czar of arts and culture. But here's the catch. It only lasts as long to the end of the episode. Although it's very likely that you're
last.
But here's the thing. You might be one of the few guests whose power actually would go up after you exit the episode. You're like, wait a minute. My power hasn't diminished. What are you talking about? But let's just, for the sake of argument, as the city's czar of arts and culture, we would love for you to pass policy. And what policy would you pass to advance?
I would bring up the sales tax 1%. You know, that is a no-brainer to me. And I think that politicals from both sides have the ability, they work together a little more than people think. I mean, we work with all sides to get the convention center done. But that 1% sales tax, like, we're in trouble if this doesn't happen, right? American Rescue Act will come in, bring hundreds of millions of dollars. It's a Band-Aid. So a lot of the pensions, and you can talk about things like that, but a lot more money needs to go into infrastructure, arts and cultures, and all those types of things. So if I had the ability, that would be my number one right there right now. And I think, I think it will get there. I do.
Yeah.
I think you may have read our like employee manual about that sales tax. That it's like the, it's the number one thing that we also think are supportive of too. I think partially because I think you're right, like the demands of our city just don't support where our sales tax is right now, right? So particularly with all the things that we want, and I think they're all important. We totally join you in that.
I think it's what you guys are doing is it's really cool what you guys are doing, right? And because I don't know who was really working on, you know, arts and cultures and who was on the leader and who was on the forefront like 10 years ago doing it, right? And who was really pushing for it. I'm sure there were people, but you know, I like what you guys are doing.
Well, that's a good sign. If you like it, that's a good sign, because you got the Midas touch, but you know what's working. And I'm excited to hit the avenue. I want to get there.
Oh, more than I've ever succeeded. Let's try to get it. So it's time I have to succeed. I got three kids I got to put through college. So it has to be all winners from here on out, I'll tell you that.
They're not going to take in the family business. They're not following you. And they got that emotional intelligence. They know how to host and they got all that down.
To tell you the truth, they're a lot smarter than I am. All my kids are straight A students. I'm really blessed. And so, you know, I never was. I had to really work hard for B's.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty blessed.
Nice. Good stuff. Well, We're really appreciative. I know, like, you've been so generous with your time, and we're so glad you spent time with us. As you know, we're trying to make Milwaukee a vibrant and inclusive place. You know, you have been doing it with just hosting people, right, and bringing people together around the amazing food at Carnivore, and again at the Avenue, which I said is going to bring so many talented chefs out, but also many people together, right, to enjoy each other. We're so grateful for your leadership. How can folks find you when you're not a whirling dervish moving around from spot to spot? How can they follow, keep up with you, and find you?
My site, omarmke.com. I have all my social on there and email, so yeah, they can reach out anytime.
At pre-pandemic times, they'd be able to find you at the gym, which is where I used to find you, and you hitting those big weights, but apparently no more, man, right?
You hit it. You used to hit that gym hard, man. I mean, there's a lot of people there for social, but you were there to hit it, man. And I told you that when I met you. Yeah. You know, so no, I built a gym at my house, a home gym downstairs, actually a year before the pandemic hit. So my son and I got like incredible shape throughout the pandemic. It's therapy.
It is, right?
Yeah, that's right. You're not kidding. That's right.
All right, man. Well, thanks so much, man. Thank you for being on the pod, man. Appreciate
having me
you
on,
your
man.
Leadership.
Good to see you guys. Just have a drink sometime.
Absolutely. Look forward to it.
I like towards the end that we got to talking about working out.
Yeah.
And I feel like I knew I was kind of rushing us off, but because I could have lived there for a while. I wanted just to talk, you know, rep schemes. I wanted to talk.
In the prep questions, we should have sent him some notes about what his workout routine is. Cause that dude's in shape.
You can lift?
That dude is in shape.
You can get going. How much you bench? He'd probably be like 285, maybe.
You know, I'm, as you may know, I'm not like, I don't have great bench strength. It's not my area of strength. Omar and I got to know each other at the Wisconsin Athletic Club. And man, on the bench press, I was always embarrassed whenever we had to go back and forth. Cause like,
you gotta pull it down. I gotta
pull weight down. Yeah, that's right.
You gotta strip it down. And you're like, all the time, you're not making eye contact and you're just apologizing. No, I'm sorry. Right. Man, I'm sorry. Dude, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, I'm taking it up. You're trying to get a swell. You're trying to get a pump on, and just kind of flow. Anyways, I'm really grateful because busy guy, and he's got a lot of important projects going on, and so I appreciate that we can get him on the pod. It's a sign that the influence is growing. That #imagination is taking flight.
You know, I think his take on the chef culture, right, about how our city's sort of changing through the kinds of chefs that are here and the kinds of food they're making. I think that's such an interesting sort of long view, right, that we're sort of still in this transition of like kind of recognizing and honoring our traditions of beer, brats, and cheese, all delicious stuff. Mm-hmm. But that there is like this sort of like transition of younger folks coming in here making more adventurous food. And I also thought the notion, right, that like high-end chefs having like the sort of everyday food level, right, is such a unique view, right? That like, man, if you can execute a burger well, you're gonna get people coming back to you every day, right? It's the Danny Meyer model with Shake Shack.
Yeah, it's this interesting duality that I do think that like because of, he noted this, right? The sort of growth of food TV,
yeah,
and sort of the accessibility of foodie culture. Like more people know about different types of cuisines and levels of excellence within it, and they want to get that. And people really want good custard. They want good burger, really well done. So, like, you know, really done well. So both can be true, right? And what that means is hopefully more and more people are not only increasing their sophisticated palate, but also wanting to, you know, they want quality even in the basics, you know, and so what we might perceive as basics, and there's room for all of that here, definitely here in Milwaukee. You can get it all here, and I'm looking forward for that, for more of that to come as well. And again, I can't wait to check out the Avenue, you know, when that.
Oh man, can't wait.
That's pretty awesome. You know what else I can't wait to check out, David?
This might be a little creepy, but our listeners.
I'm glad I just put that on you because we just needed to get to the end, and you're the one who sounds super creepy, so that's fine. That being said, We do love our listeners. Thanks again for listening. You all are growing steadily, and we're so glad you're joining us. So glad you're finding us. And we hope you enjoyed it. We'd love for you to keep supporting the podcast, share it around with others, post about it on social media, leave a rating and review, or gosh, hit us up at pod@imaginemka.org. We would love to do a viewer mail episode, and we'd love to talk to you. You know, love to hear your emails and read them out loud. So send it to us there.
Imagine This Podcast is a team effort produced, edited, and hosted by MacArthur Antigua, David Lee, and Lindsay Sheridan, and is the flagship of the Imagine MKE Podcast Network. Make sure you also listen and subscribe to Black Imagination and back episodes of Arts Forward MKE, all of which can be found at imaginemke.org/podcasts.
To catch all the latest from Imagine MKE, hit us up at Twitter, Insta at @imagine_MKE, or at Facebook, Imagine MKE.
Thanks again, and we will catch you next Tuesday
when our guest is famed author and my neighbor, Anuradha Rajukar. Until then, till Tuesday. Bye.
Good.
You're supposed to say voice as Carrie. Someone has to say voice as Carrie.
You know, I thought about it.
You just made me sad. That made me sad.
We're going to leave that in.
Gen X things.
Speaking of Gen X things, do you remember a form of shopping where you would go to a place and shop by catalog, and the people you turn in like a piece of paper, and they go in the back.
They go in the back.
They bring it back out to you.
And we called it, so in Chicago, suburban Chicago, there's a place called McDade's or American Sales. And the premise, and I remember this because I remember this is when I bought my Intellivision. This is how it went.
I bought my Atari, or my parents bought my Atari
like
that way.
You buy high-end stuff, like high-ish, right. And so you grab the tag, you give it to the person. And I remember this because I would wait. You bought it, and then it would come on a little conveyor belt.
Then there's this
moment of like, oh, it's coming. Like, I remember creating my head going, where are those idiots? Where's my Intellivision?
where's my computer games?
Where's my Intellivision? I'm creating my head. Yeah.
So wait,
that was joy. Dude.
Yeah,
that was joy. Yes, McDade's.
It wasn't called McDade's in San Francisco. It was called like Consumer Something, Consumer Service Something.
Yeah, yeah. American Sales was another thing. The other thing was, when you think about it, American Sales. How about a vague title for a place? American Sales. We are in America. We're selling things. This could be anything. That also reminds me of like Toys R Us used to do that with like Nintendo and games like that. Like you had to do the tag because they just didn't trust people. Like people just probably, you know.
Right. But at least when you went to a Toys R Us, like you knew what you were getting into, like the consumer, whatever the thing I'm thinking of, right? Like you buy all kinds of crazy stuff. Like not only electronics, but I think like sofas, lamps, kinds of weird stuff.
But I guess the premise is we just want the showroom. Like, we don't want to put the inventory out in the showroom, right?
Yeah, it was the place I remember, right? It's basically like a counter.
Yeah.
A counter in front of the counter where you'd like look through the catalog.
Okay, there's a little showroom.
There was no showroom. It was basically like you give them the tag. They go back and they do the little like
You look through the catalog. I get that, right? You look through the catalog.
Service merchandise.
Service merchandise.
That's it.
Service merchandise.
That's what it's called.
That's it. Service merchandise. By the way, that is an awesome title for a place, isn't it? Like I would name, like if I had a band, I'd name it Service Merchandise now. Like that's how great that phrase is together, like phonetically. Service merchandise. That's cool. That's a cool phrase. Like I'm sure we could say it a bunch of times and after a while it would stop losing its meaning. After a while, we just get lost. Like what? What? Like, what does that mean?
It is almost like American Sales.
It's American Sales. Like, what is this? Just that reminds me. I also thought of Tibet Convenient. Those are two words I always like going back together. There's in the north side of Chicago, there was like a little like a little grocery store kind of thing, but it was called Tibet Convenient. And I like those words together. I'm like, I like that.
Were they Tibetans who ran the place?
Much like that hyperlink you discussed that you didn't click on, I'm like, I think they're probably Tibetans. So I can't verify, but I'm pretty sure it is. So, yeah. But I always put that away in my mind. I'm like, I'm going to name something Tibet Convenient someday. So there you go. American Sales, Service Merchandise, Tibet Convenient. Two words that really go well together, but they don't usually hang out together.
And I'm like, you know who we do hang out with?
Who do we hang
out with? It is Tuesday, our listeners.
Hey! Are we, is this, wait, was this really the postmortem of it? Was this the postmortem?
I thought that was going to be our cold open, given that Lindsay's not in the office.
I love it. We're just going to go. I like the idea of it. We're not even welcoming people. I like it. It's a special edition.
Maybe that'll be the Easter egg.
Yeah, that's Easter egg. Yeah, Gen X things. Wendell will be mad that we had it.